Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
The Biden administration still isn't handling the border crisis, and woke culture is infecting our schools. Hey, it's the Chicks from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's podcast is sponsored by AMAC, the only conservative alternative to AARP. Join today at amac.us/Carter. Hey, folks, today I'm going to be joined by ex-CIA officer or former CIA officer Daniel Hoffman, who is a good friend of mine, a contributor at Fox News, and someone who I have great admiration, respect, and love for. His family is just amazing. Wait until he's not only going to talk to us about what he thinks is going to happen with Ukraine. And I mean, his analysis has always been spot on. He's an expert in Russian. He worked, you know, in Russia. He speaks many, many languages. And he is somebody who I go to whenever I have any questions about these areas of the world. But more importantly, he is going to be talking about the incredible work and devotion and dedication that his 12-year-old son is doing to help children with cancer after losing his own mom, his beautiful wife, Daniel's beautiful wife, to cancer last year. His son, Jaron Hoffman, he's going to be talking about his story and what we all can do, to help fight childhood cancer and to help, you know, bring attention to this really, really important subject. And it's not something that we should, you know, walk away from. It's something we should really face head on. And like the courage in his own family, we need to do that as well. So I can't wait to talk to Daniel about this. Remember, you can follow me and subscribe to all of my social media so you could stay up on the latest stories at sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com. And while you're there, sign up for our email list so that you don't get shadow banned. By the way, before I get into the whole MyPillow and My Store ad, because they are a great sponsor. Mike Lindell is a good friend and a great sponsor of this show. Yes, FBI, they are a sponsor of this show. Apparently the FBI, you know, likes to harass people that are close to President Trump. And this is what happened. Of course, you guys all know this, to Mike Lindell. So he is, you know, obviously fighting a battle on a number of fronts, FBI taking his cell phone from him. Mike, you know, said, I know you probably have all seen this over and over again, that his whole life is in his cell phone, his work and everything. That's his computer. So I guess the FBI just got everything they wanted right there at one-stop shop when they surrounded him at a Hardee's drive-thru. So let's do what we can to support Mike Lindell. We want to go to MyPillow.com/Carter. That's MyPillow.com/Carter. He has a sale of the year on MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. You can get queen size. Regular price is usually $89.98. Right now you can get those queen size sheets for $39.98 with the promo code Carter. Don't forget to use the promo code Carter. That's how you're going to get them so cheap. They're breathable. They're cool. They're crisp. They're durable. 250 thread count. I mean, you are going to get the best sheets, queen size, king size, any color, variety, and style that you're looking for, you are going to get them at MyPillow.com. And guess what? You have a 60-day money-back guarantee. Nobody offers that. You can't get that anywhere else. 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 for deep discounts on the MyPillow Percal bed sheets. Queen size regular, $89.98 on sale now for only $39.98. While there, take advantage of the buy one, get one free sale on everything. Christmas is around the corner. It will get here faster than you can imagine. Christmas will be here and you're going to need those extra gifts underneath your tree to give to those family members that you forgot were going to stop by. So do that. Get towels and more. Visit MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 today for the sale of the year on MyPillow Percal bed sheets. MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la vacuna que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
I'm really happy to have my good friend and former CIA officer and can I say station chief, Daniel Hoffman, here on the Sarah Carter Show. His expertise in foreign affairs and national security is, I think, top notch. There are very few people, Daniel, that I go to for expert advice on what is happening, particularly right now with Ukraine and Russia and with issues around the world. It's you. I want to go to you. I want to get your take on what's going on. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks. It's always a pleasure and an honor to join you. So thanks again for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. I wish sometimes people could just hear us like chit-chatting like before we get on, because we just let it all out. We don't hold anything back. And, you know, but one of the things that you told me as, you know, as you came on was this amazing, amazing work. And I want to honor your son, that your son has done to raise money to fight childhood cancer. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I'm going to direct everybody to foxnews.com in a minute to let them know where they can read the story about the work that your son has done.
Yeah, I will. So, you know, my wife, Kim, passed away in March of 2021. She had neuroendocrine cancer of the pancreas discovered in January of 2017. So she fought really hard for 4 years, and she fought for every second on this earth that she could have. Especially, and even after, you know, we knew that she wasn't going to make it, she wasn't going to beat cancer, because she had to get me in a position where I could raise my kids. And I learned more from her about what's most important, that is raising two little boys who are now 12 and 9, than from anybody on this planet. But, you know, my two sons and I, you know, we grieve together. There is an element of, honestly, of post-traumatic stress from that, from losing my wife and young kids. But part of the grieving process is that, you know, we never, ever give up. My wife took the fight to cancer and never quit. And so one of the ways that we do that is I asked my older son, who's 12, I said, look, he's got a charity project that he needs to do. And I asked him what he wanted to do. And he said, I want to honor mom's memory and do something connected to cancer. We had a long conversation over days. Do you want to do something for the cure, which is, you know, $1 million moonshot, or maybe you want to work on the care? And he said, you know, Dad, the cure is too much for me. I'm a kid, but maybe I can help people who have cancer. And so I've been in touch with the Jesse Reese Foundation because their national spokesperson, one of them is Caitlin Santanow, an Olympic gold medalist in swimming. And so I directed my son to that website and had him take a look. And he said, you know, Dad, Jesse Reese got brain cancer when she was 11 and she died when she was 12. That's my age. And she came up with this idea to help kids who have cancer bring some joy to their lives by sending them jars. She called them joy jars, full of toys and other gifts that they could open and know somebody cares about them. And that really struck a chord with my older son. He said, I want to do something to help them. I want to help those kids. And so I called the Jesse Reese Foundation. I talked to their director of community development, and they said, look, if you could raise a few thousand dollars, we'll do an event in your town. And I said, well, my son, I think we should set a goal. We're going to set a goal of, let's say, $100,000. And I think they thought I was crazy, but my 12-year-old son, Jaron, wrote a very heartfelt, beautiful letter that I sent around to a lot of potential corporate sponsors. He did a podcast, and then he was interviewed in the article that you mentioned by Fox News. And so the donation started to flow. We had one big one that was from an anonymous. I mean, I know who the person is. The person just wishes to remain anonymous, but he's up to $200,000. The event is scheduled for October 8 in Tyson's Corner at our local gym. The general manager of the gym, my son, my two sons and I went to him and said, look, this is what we're doing. And he said to me, we get asked for these sorts of things all the time, but we're doing this one. And because I know your kids, you know, and I knew your wife, and we want to help. And so they've given us their facility, the whole, you know, basketball courts. And it's an all-day event where we're going to have over 150 people already signed up to stuff joy jars. I was joking with the Jesse Reese Foundation. I'm from Boston, so the movie Jaws kind of, I remember that. Remember when the actor Robert Shaw is trying to fight the shark and the sheriff's we're going to need a bigger boat. And I said to Jesse Reese Foundation, like, we're going to need more joy jar stuff. We got $200,000 worth of joy jars we need to stuff. But, you know, and I'll just tell you to kind of close it out. I mean, it brings, you know, a lot of joy for my kids, and it's how we grieve through this process. And, you know, God bless Jesse Reese. I never met her, but her older sister, Shea, you know, she gets on the phone with my kids, and they share in the grief that they both, that they all, you know, struggle with every day. They share that together. And I'll just tell you one last thing. I learned Russian and I read a lot of Russian literature, and the opening lines of Anna Karenina were that every happy family is alike and every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And I read that whole book in Russian and I believed that until my wife got cancer and I realized that, no, my unhappy family is a hell of a lot like a whole lot of other families that are unhappy. The Jesse Reese family, God bless Jesse Reese. She left us a map. You know, I love her family and they love mine back. And we are in this together. We're unhappy in different ways, but the same way, you know, and we share our grief and we get so much support and we get a lot of love and a lot of kindness from one another. And honestly, that's just what keeps us going. And so if you ask me, like, what am I most excited about? What means the most to me in my life? For my kids, for sure. And this particular charity project. And we're going to maintain our relationship with Jesse Reese Foundation, you know, forever. It just means the world to my two sons and me. So I appreciate you giving me the chance to kind of wax on about it. But honestly, you know, more than anything, that's what my family's all about right now.
I tell you, your wife is smiling down on you and Jaron and your sons and the work that you're doing, because this is what, Daniel, this is what we all should be doing. We spend so much time is wasted fighting one another, and we've seen that in our country with, you know, just politics and the divisions and people aren't talking to each other anymore, when it's the simplest things in life, just those moments that you shared with your wife, with your children, those beautiful moments that you have. But those are the things that we take with us. Those are the things that live in our spirit. And what your son's doing is just remarkable. I mean, you must be so proud of him. I know I am. I hope I'm in DC on October 8th. I hope that I can help stuff some jars with you. I mean, I want everybody.
We got Starbucks coffee and a bunch of pizza on the way too. So look, I try to teach my kids, if there's one thing I try to teach them, it's empathy. See the world through the eyes of others. You may agree or not agree with what they're saying, but see the world through their eyes. Understand them. That was what I had to do with CIA. A lot of people think the CIA is Jason Bourne, or if you're older like I am, Sean Connery and that cool stuff. Yeah, I learned how to do some, you know, learn how to like rappel and shoot weapons and trauma first aid and jump out of a plane, whatever other cool stuff you did. But at the end of the day, it's about sizing people up and understanding from another person's optic what they're going through. That's how you recruit sources. But it's also how we should live our lives. Like my older son warms my heart because he sees the world through the eyes of these kids who have cancer because his mom died from that same disease. And my kids are understanding what empathy is. Certainly sympathy is impossible without empathy, but just living on this planet. And as you said, I wish Democrats and Republicans would be more empathic with one another and work their stuff out without resorting to nasty name calling and failing to solve the problems that, you know, are inflicted upon all of us here, whether we're Democrats or Republicans. And, you know, our elected representatives don't always do a great job of that. And sometimes I think that they ought to go and listen to some first grade teacher and learn a little bit about how you can get along better. But
or even your son. Take lessons from what people are doing out in the real world. And you're right about, I say this too, you know, my daughter has never known her dad not to be blind. He's always been blind. I remember when she was 2 years old and she would have to guide him around. You know, if I wasn't around, she would guide Marty around, you know, the store or move him this way or that way. And it just became a part of her life. Or like, Daddy, look at my dress. And she'd take his hands and put it on her shoulders and feel the dress. Or can you see my face if you touch it? Will you be able to see me? You know, those things. But it made her stronger. Not that we wanted, he didn't want to be blind. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants these things. Nobody wants to lose the person that they love. But it's amazing when children who are so resilient and have a good parent like you, I think you're a phenomenal parent and a phenomenal father, have a way to gear those emotions and those feelings so that a child grows up with empathy. A child grows up saying, I know, I can imagine how you feel. I can imagine how you feel because I've been there. And let me help you out. Let me lift you up.
You know, the commonality we're both talking about is that both our families are very open with the personal struggles and challenges that we've had to face. And that's the only way to deal with a challenge like that is head on. And just my sons and I, we remember my wife, Kim, all the time. You know, I was just reading to my younger son last night in bed and I looked at him. I said, you know, who gave you the best snuggles ever? And he's like, Mom did, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And we had that moment where we talked about, you know, his mom and just being open about the feelings that you have and grieving together. Cause I mean, that's how that's how you manage it. It's how you get through it. You carry that grief with you forever. And what I love about your family is that somebody not as strong and without the kind of support that your husband has wouldn't have been able to live the kind of life he's living, but his life is full. He's got a great family and you're all making that happen because you love him and you support him and he does right. The same for you. It's great.
And I think we all learn that, right? Like not everyone, but like, I think depending on what we've been through in our own lives, and this is probably going to go to your work and everything else. We learn, I've learned in my life that when I make a commitment to someone, when I make a commitment to my country, my work, my husband, my family, that's a real commitment. That's not a fly-by-night, like something happens to you, I'm going to pack my bags and I'm out the door. You know, there's a real commitment and it's hard sometimes. Everybody has a struggle, and you know, there's all kinds of emotions. Nobody's a superhero. We're all dealing with our own junk. And but there's a commitment there, and there's something so fulfilling about that, because once you kind of get through that, it's like all next level, isn't it? It's like kind of it's a next level. You can't really explain to people what that is, but that love and that feeling of committing yourself to something and getting through it together is really a spectacular feeling to know that you'll be there for each other, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I felt that same calm and powerful, like, unity of mission when I was serving overseas, especially in war zones, when I was in Iraq or right. Pakistan or traveling in Afghanistan. There's nothing like, you know, having, you know, missiles raining down on you if you're in a war zone, or people getting shot at or other things, to bring everybody together in common cause. And you get a lot, you know, you get a lot of strength from that common mission and that honor and that pride that you're serving your country. Gosh, that just means the world to people. If there's one thing I miss about CIA, it's all those great people with whom I had the honor of serving, you know, and I'll see them on occasion now, but I'm not doing the work with them anymore, you know, and that's, that's sometimes that's tough. I got a lot of good memories, and I'm sorry I'm not making new ones.
Oh, I know. Let's talk about that, because right now there is a massive conflict. If anyone knows or understands Russia, I think it would be you, Daniel. You speak Russian. You speak Finnish. When we were in Finland, I couldn't believe how great you had just mastery of the Finnish language, which is probably one of the hardest languages in the world to learn, and Russian as well. It's a very difficult language to learn. But what's happening right now in Ukraine, in the Ukrainian conflict, and Ukraine's made great strides against Russia. There's a lot of concern right now that the Russians, especially Vladimir Putin, may up the ante. There's worry that he could use a smaller nuclear weapon that he won't want to lose publicly against Ukraine. Talk a little bit about that, because you know the personalities of the people that we are dealing with. So should we be worried about that? Should the Ukrainians?
Yeah, so whenever Russia's involved with anything, you should be worried. And look, what we're seeing right now from Ukraine is a really effective counteroffensive where Ukraine has taken over the Kharkiv region. And it's important because there was one particular town, Izyum, which means raise in English, and the Russians were using that as a logistical base from which to launch attacks in the Donbas region in the south against Ukraine. So this is a big deal. It's not a coincidence that Ukraine has been able to launch this counteroffensive and stay in the fight, because the United States has finally been providing some of the weapons that they so desperately needed. But it took us so long. And one of the questions I think historians will be asking is, well, it's counterfactual history, but what if we had given Ukraine all of the artillery and the military equipment a little bit sooner, like maybe a year ago, or even in April of 2021, maybe Russia wouldn't have even attacked. I think they still would have, but Ukraine would have been in a better position to repel them. You know, Russia has made incredibly horrific tactical errors. And if they hadn't made those errors, you know, there would be even more death and destruction in Ukraine. So we're seeing this counteroffensive. We're seeing a lot of concern in Russia. I listen to the news on a regular basis, and some of the, you know, Kremlin state TV pundits are saying that this military special operation, as Vladimir Putin likes to call it, even though, hey, it's a war. When 25,000 of your soldiers are dead,
right,
it's kind of a war. So they're calling that a failure. And they're starting to play the blame game. And of course, they won't blame Vladimir Putin, but they're looking for other scapegoats. And the real question, to get to your point, is, well, what is Vladimir Putin going to do about this? Because his propaganda machine called Ukraine an existential threat, a country mm-hmm. run by Nazis, which is totally preposterous. Their president's Jewish, you know, and the
exactly.
Nazis were, you know, that was a different time in history. And those were, you know, Adolf Hitler's Germans, but the Ukrainians aren't that. So if you fail to conquer Ukraine, Vladimir Putin, then what are you going to do about it? You know, and he's facing threats from his ultra nationalist wing of his supporters, because they don't understand why 200 days later he hasn't conquered Ukraine. You know, Gorbachev, who just died a couple weeks ago, outlived his own country, and his legacy is that he dialed down the end of the evil empire thanks to President Reagan's leadership and President Bush. without resorting to violence. He wouldn't do it. And Vladimir Putin is using violence and trying to restore not maybe the Soviet Union, but a sphere of influence by forcefully conquering Ukraine and imposing regime change on the government in Kyiv. He's not going to succeed at that. So what happens next? He's used banned chemical nerve agents. He turned a defector into a human dirty bomb in the UK. He's got nuclear weapons. He's got other weapons of mass destruction. Would he use those? He's already killed countless civilians, raining down hell on them in Ukraine. So I just fear things are going to get even more bloody in Ukraine, tragically for the people there and for the region, but especially for the Ukrainians. You know, millions of them have fled. We take so much for granted in our culture. Kids are going to school every day. We can put food on our table. Yeah, we've got other issues here like inflation and things that we're concerned about, but we're not living in a state of war like they are.
Well, and it's, I also think about like, not only the fear that Vladimir Putin could definitely pursue the use of a small, maybe nuclear weapon against Ukraine in an effort to save face before the world, because I think that's probably what he's most concerned about right now. But I'm also worried about the fact that we've seen Vladimir Putin over the years become really, we've allowed him to become the energy giant, right? I mean, this is a nation that has played a number of games with the West, of course. Look at what's happened in Germany. Look at what's happening across Europe as the winter approaches. And look at their relationship with China. And that combination with China is something that I think is, this is a new world. And I don't want to use the word new world order because I don't want to say that. But this is something that's evolving because of the developments that we've seen, because of their ability to grow, and not just, and I'm not talking about economically, but through energy resources. And China's done the same thing. China's done the same thing. While we've been focused on the monetary, right? Economics, World Economic Forum, our economics and, you know, manufacturing overseas. I mean, I feel like China and Russia have been collecting, you know, like in a monopoly game, all of the resources that we need to sustain ourselves. I mean, am I wrong? I don't know.
No, you're 100% right. This war in Ukraine has been transformational, I think, in three ways. First is what you talked about. Vladimir Putin has delivered a real pivot for Russia. Away from the West, they're not exporting gas and oil to the West like they were. Unfortunately, they're still, you know, Europe is still dependent upon Russia. We warned them, you know, we've been warning them for a while about overdependence on Russian hydrocarbons, and they didn't listen. But Russia's pivoted to China. China's importing massive amounts of Russian oil and gas, and the Russians are relying on Iran for their drones and North Korea for artillery. So it's a pivot to that troika of dictatorships, and it's what Putin wanted because he knew that being linked with the West meant being linked in other ways. You know, that if ideas of democracy, freedom, and liberty from the West seep into Russia, that's the greatest threat to his regime. So that's the first, you know, kind of big transformational change I think that we've seen. The second one that is ongoing is this war is a failure, and there is massive pressure on Putin's inner circle. His Minister of Defense, Shoigu, who never deserved the job, doesn't have the military credentials for it and failed with his strategy in Ukraine, is under pressure. So is the director of the FSB, Bortnikov, and the national security advisor, Patrushev, who used to be director of FSB. Those are the three in Putin's inner circle who are certainly the strongest. And the question is, you know, kind of who turns on whom first? And that's a big requirement for our intelligence community. How are those three and their key lieutenants reacting to this failure in Ukraine? And are they going to try to stab Putin in the back before he stabs them first? I mean, that's a big issue. So lots of pressure there. That's kind of the second one. And the third one have been Putin's efforts to just crush dissent. He's ended it for anybody who's, you know, supporting human rights or democracy. But this latest car bomb reminded me of like The Godfather, where this right-wing kind of nationalist, ultra-nationalist Alexander Dugin was leaving an event on a Saturday night and they blew up his car, but his daughter happened to be in it instead of him. That was meant for him, a message to Putin's kind of ultra-nationalist guys, like, stop criticizing me too much, turn your ire on others, or else this is how you're going to end up. And then countless executives, Lukoil and others, who have you know, died in very suspicious circumstances, like falling out of a hospital, you know, seventh floor wing of the hospital, and nobody exactly knows how that happened, or somebody drowning in the, you know, in the sea. I mean, it's just classic stuff, mafia hits, mafia style hits in Russia. So Putin is feeling a lot of pressure, not from the population writ large. He's got them pretty well suppressed, but it's the people who are in more closer to his inner circle. And so I think,
are they going to put up with this? I mean, think about Dugin. I mean, yeah. His daughter was in the car. I mean, this is like, I mean, you're dealing, and you're right, you're talking about mafia style hits. I mean, it's Vladimir Putin that I've been thinking about this for a week now. When is somebody going to try to take him out? Because they may be like, okay, this is getting out of control. He is not winning the war in Ukraine. I mean, they could turn on him. They could turn on him old Soviet style, right?
Right. I mean, that in previous wars that Russia lost, so 1905 to Japan ends in revolution, failed revolution. But it's a dress rehearsal for 1917 when they lost to the Germans. Then you got the Soviet, you know, Bolshevik mm-hmm. revolution. And so Vladimir Putin is well aware that when Russia loses a war, it might not end too well for the leader, who might end up with his head on a spike. And you're absolutely right. I mean, we don't know this because it's got to be super secret. But there were, you know, hundreds of attempts to kill Hitler back in the day. I'm sure there's talk about it, about removing Putin. But Putin is a KGB guy, and he's pretty smart about keeping himself safe. Anybody who's been around him at big events, you know, notices he doesn't eat or drink anything. He's very careful about his surroundings, very careful about being close to anybody who could do him harm. So, it would be a very difficult operation to remove him, you know, by force and send him off to the sanatorium or even something more diabolic. But that's something that we have to be aware of. And remember, like, this country has a lot of nuclear weapons, and they could wipe the United States off the map. We shouldn't assume that if Putin is overthrown, that the next guy who takes over is going to be any better.
Right.
Could be worse, could be more dangerous to the United States. And so,
kind of like the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. Or
yeah.
You might kind of know that devil. You might have a dossier on him. I mean, but it's not going to be Christopher Steele's dossier. It's probably going to be a real one, but it's not going to have
that,
like...
Not that piece of crap.
But, not that but piece of crap dossier, but...
Right. But the thing that we got to do, the two things we got to do is this administration, we need to have the outreach to Russian officials, diplomats, military mm-hmm. and intelligence, talking about what's going on in a back channel kind of secret way, protected from any public scrutiny. And then we need intelligence collection on what's going on inside Russia. God bless Ambassador Sullivan. You know, he just retired from Moscow, out of Moscow. Former Deputy Secretary of State under Secretary Pompeo. He's one of the great public servants. I'm not just saying that because he's from my hometown of Boston, but he was an exceptional diplomat, and we're going to miss his presence in Moscow. We don't have an ambassador there now, and we kind of need one.
Do we have enough, people working in, you know, these? That's what I'm always worried about. I always think there's not enough human collection in places like North Korea or even Iran or China
or Afghanistan
or Afghanistan, exactly, or Afghanistan, and we're kind of losing that intel collection ability, and that scares me because something could come out of left field. I mean, look, they could. I mean, he could end up dying. Vladimir Putin could easily end up being taken out. I mean, I don't want to say this to scare him, but, you know, I mean, there are people probably around him that want to see him go. And then you're right. Someone else fills his place. Another thing that really worries me, too, and this to me, I don't think it's my paranoia. I think it's reality based on what I've been investigating and what has been out there in open source, as you guys like to say it, you know, out there in the media. Look at what China's done in the United States over the last decade and a half. I mean, purchasing land all around our military bases, putting in telecom, Huawei, telecom communications in around our 150 nuclear silos in Montana, setting up their little systems in our cellular towers, which I pray and hope that we eventually became smart enough to take care of, but they were there. Last I saw, you know, people are concerned about this. I have Admiral Kirby, you know, at the Pentagon, when the AP asked him or someone had asked him there at the Pentagon, hey, what about China purchasing all this land, doing all these land grabs in America, even in our farmlands. Shouldn't we be concerned about that? But it's right around our military bases. And he's like, that's not in my bailiwick. What? You're at the Pentagon. It's in your bailiwick. What are you talking about? Are you concerned that these nations, that these adversaries of ours, Daniel, that we're asleep at the wheel here, the Trojan horse is already here and they could be working against us to knock us down, to take, you know, to be the world powers, to be the leaders in world power.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're under siege for sure. You know, China is attacking us every day in the homeland. As you said, massive amounts of espionage. They're flooding the zone with their Confucius Institutes and the Thousand Talent Program. And then their so-called diplomats and spies here in the United States, cyber attacks. The FBI, according to Director A, opens up a new counterintelligence investigation related to China every few minutes. So, yes. And Admiral Kirby, I was disappointed at that because he's at the bully pulpit. You know, so this is your chance to raise awareness and say, yes, this is of grave concern. And then tell us who's responsible. Like, does the Congress need to legislate?
Right.
Does the executive branch need to take action? What do we need to do? We got a bunch of citizens here. See something, say something. You know, we're a democracy and we have a lot of freedom here. You know, I was just tracking in China, you've got people screaming from their apartment their apartment complexes because they're in lockdown, you know, or they're when they do get out, they it's a feeding frenzy to grab anything they can from the local markets because then they got to go sit at home for two more weeks. I mean, that's the dictatorship that they live in.
They're jumping out of their windows. They're jumping out of their windows, off their balconies. It's I'm going to play this clip because I want people to hear it. I know we've got this clip.
Given the fact that known adversary, in the case of China, foreign buyers are buying up U.S. real estate, in some cases farms around military installations, is this on the administration's radar? And what is being done, perhaps, to study this or to protect Americans from making sure that homes remain affordable and so on?
I think the question of home ownership is a little bit out of my swim lane, but
particularly when it comes to around military installations.
What I will tell you is that the president has been nothing but clear about our concerns about Chinese unfair trade practices and economic practices. I understand that, ma'am, but
buying up land around military installations.
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to ask about home ownership here in the United States.
This isn't about home ownership. This is about buying up land around military installations. Is that a concern to this administration?
Go ahead, April.
Okay. I sent this to your office last week. They've had a week to look at this, including the article.
Okay, we can get back to you afterwards. We're going to move on. Go ahead, April.
I love that gal. I sent that to your office about a week ago. So you've had like a week. I'm not throwing you off here. And I got to tell you, Daniel, before, you know, for full disclosure, when I first came to Washington, D.C., and then shortly after the Obama administration came, you know, on board and Obama began his tenure as president, I was the Pentagon correspondent for the Washington Times. So I knew then Captain Kirby. I knew Admiral Mullen, who, you know, the Joint Chiefs, and I would travel with them sometimes to Afghanistan and other parts. And a lot of times I was just on the ground. For the most part, there was a lot of great cooperation, except in one area, China. Always an issue. They didn't even want to talk to Bill Gertz. I don't know if you know who he is, but Bill Gertz. He's written a ton of books on China. Of course, he is an expert on China. And I remember always hearing from the Pentagon, hey, if we're going to go in for a meeting at the Washington Times, is Bill Gertz going to be there? Because we're not going to answer those questions on China. Why is the U.S. so hesitant to say anything about China, who is an open adversary of ours and who has promised to take away our power and knock us down? They've made that promise.
So the Obama administration, in my view at least, was like the last gasp of try to bring China into the community of nations and find common ground. You remember that that famous meeting in the Rose Garden with President Obama and Xi Jinping when she promised not to militarize the South China Sea. And what did they do? What are they doing now? Mm-hmm. Look, I think one of the President Reagan, one of the greatest things he did was to tell all of us in very clear terms, where we stood in our ideological fight against the Soviet Union and what that administration, his administration, was doing about it. And you know, that is, we're not doing that right now. I'm not sure that Americans understand as well as they should just the ubiquitous nature of China's threats, how significant they are to our national security, and maybe most importantly, what we all need to be doing about it. And it might involve some sacrifice on the part of American citizens, which is why the president needs to address them. I'll tell you what, I have no plans to go back in the government, but one of the things I've learned is, you know, if I ever did go back, is that when you're behind the bully pulpit and you get a question that matters, answer the question. If it's out of your, that's not out of his lane. He's at the Department of Defense. That's in his lane. But most questions are going to be in your lane. And you could even say, well, let me tell you that, you know, ownership of land, it's a question for CFIUS. And most Americans would be like, CFIUS, what's that? Doesn't matter. Right. But he can say, let me tell you about the threat from China and why it matters. And yes, we've got to do something about them not getting access to land near our military bases. They tried to do it in Texas. I've written about that for Fox News. But when you got that chance, I think I've met Admiral Kirby too, and I think he probably, I can't know for sure. I'm wondering whether he regrets not taking that opportunity to raise awareness of the threat. Director Ray does it, but the president needs to do more of it. President Biden could get up on his bully pulpit as President Reagan did, and then also look for those, you know, tear down the wall, Mr. Gorbachev, those kinds of moments. And that's,
yeah,
what,
but President, you know, Reagan, it's almost like they wanted him to avoid it, because they said, yes, you got the questions a week ago. So he knew it was going to come up, but he didn't want to answer it. And by the way, CFIUS is the Committee on Foreign Investments in the United States. CFIUS is a board that involves very high level government officials from all different agencies. They're supposed to be vetting all of these foreign purchases in the United States and saying, hey, no way, if it's an adversary, you're not going to be buying land right next to our bases and sticking telecom secretive whatever communications devices in our cell phone towers around our nukes. This is just kind of insanity, unless we know how China operates. And you know how China operated in Afghanistan and all over the world. There's a lot of money coming from China. And China likes to buy on the local level to the top level. China looks to purchase people, to own people, to develop friendships that seem on the outside amiable and nice, but on the inside, there's another operation at play. So that's what really scares me about this, Daniel, is that we're not seeing what's happening right before our very eyes, and that one day we may wake up and it might be too late. And that really worries me. I could talk to you forever, but I am going to ask you this before I let you go. The Biden administration's persistence in pursuit of the Iran nuclear deal. Why do they want this so badly? Why are they so desperate, despite everything we know about Iran, despite the fact that the Israelis are now saying, hey, look, the Iranians are trying to rush towards a nuke. This is not going to change it. In fact, it's going to make it happen a lot faster. Why are they so desperate from Obama to Biden?
Yeah. So look, first of all, it's a bad deal, obviously. Nuclear sunset clauses, nothing to do with Iran's ballistic missile program and nothing to do with their state sponsorship of terrorism, which is a big deal. The next leader of Al-Qaeda is in Iran right now, Saif al-Adel. And the deal was so bad that Democrats didn't support it in the Obama administration. That's why it never became a treaty. The concern I have, the reason why they want it so badly, is because they don't want to go to Plan B, which is to blow stuff up. What are you going to do? The Iranians have a clandestine nuclear program. They failed to disclose at least three sites to the IAEA where they were enriching uranium. They've got all the know-how. They are a nuclear threshold state. So if there's no deal, what's your plan? Are you going to allow Iran to look like North Korea in the Middle East? Are you kidding me? So I think the fact that they're pursuing this the way they are reflects perhaps that they just don't have another plan, or if they do have another plan, they sure don't want to put it in action. And the Iranians have to be understanding that as well. It doesn't take a clandestine source in the U.S. government to know that the U.S. wants the deal pretty badly, because maybe they don't want to blow stuff up in Iran. Maybe. You know, the Iranians tried to kill former National Security Advisor John Bolton. They tried to kill the Saudi Arabia's ambassador here in the United States 10 years ago in Georgetown, in Washington, D.C.
And so that was the Obama administration, by the way. That was during the Obama administration, and Eric Holder came out with the DOJ and had a, you know, explained that, no, this isn't just a rumor. This is a fact. The Iranians were going to use somebody from Mexico to actually target the ambassador at a restaurant in D.C. So
I was working at CIA and was there for all the briefings, you know, and I was thinking at the time, that's pretty amazing. And my imagination wouldn't have predicted all of that. So,
I mean,
they've got, you know, asymmetric proxy terrorist groups like Lebanese Hezbollah, and they've got the Houthis, and they've got a whole bunch of proxy terrorists in Iraq, and they probably have sleeper cells all around the world. And so going to war with Iran wouldn't be very pleasant. And if we were to bomb their nuclear capacity out of existence, we would face a war, arguably, or risk a war. And I don't think they want this. That's why the Trump administration, when they took out the commander of the IRGC, Soleimani, I remember you calling me on the phone that night telling me, hey, wake up, look what happened. That was big deal. And Iran is much less effective now in the region because they don't have that guy. They're much less effective at controlling events in Iraq because of that. It was the right thing to do. And tell me, what have we faced as a result? Tell me what Iran has done to us that makes it not worth having struck Soleimani. So this administration has allowed themselves to be deterred by their own kind of fanciful concerns about how the adversary may react, whether it's Russia, Iran, China. Sometimes you've got to just go for it. And I'll give President Obama credit for launching the raid to kill bin Laden. That was risky. But you've got to, there's no such thing as certainty in life. I always say the only certainty I have is I love my wife and kids. The rest of it's at some level of confidence, low, medium, or high. But again, I think that the really concerning part for me about this is this administration doesn't want to do what they have to do to prevent Iran from having a nuclear weapon, and Israel will. But that's not enough. They don't have the capability that we have.
Right. We can't make Israel our plan B. Like, okay, well, if Iran develops, and I feel like that's what we've done. We've said to Israel, okay, we're not going to take any blame for this, but if they develop it, we'll just kind of stand back and let you guys handle it. No, it doesn't work that way. It's the reason why our allies don't trust us. It's the reason why they don't trust us. I don't know, Daniel. Maybe it's me. I already think there's sleeper cells here because our border's been so wide open. And as you know, I spend so much time down there, and I am always concerned about that being just a funnel for, you know, for bad guys as well as good people who are just looking for another life. But among those people are people that are taking advantage of it. And we've already, I think, apprehended over 80 since Biden has come into office that have been connected to terrorist organizations or nations that sponsor terror. So that is already concerning. That we know of. And 800,000 plus that have come into the country that have not been vetted, that have not ever, we don't even know who they are. They've just melded into the fabric of America, and they're, some of them may be sleeper cells. I'm scared of that. I worry about that.
I mean, that's what concerns me, is that Iran operates in Latin America. So does China, by the way, and Russia. I wouldn't put it past Iran, based on what I know, to recruit locals in those countries and have them enter the United States in a way that makes them appear like anybody else, except that they've been given instructions by their Iranian handlers. And it might even be a false flag where the Iranians aren't even telling them that they're in contact with Iranians and maybe somebody else. But just to kind of establish themselves in the U.S., work whatever jobs you work, and we'll be in touch with you down the road to ask you to do something. And it could be a part of whatever their operation is. It could be conduct surveillance on a target, like we saw with the Saudi ambassador 10 years ago. Surveil it, it, you know, you got to surveil the target before you strike the target. So there's a whole host of things that could be happening. And I've always felt like if we don't know what's going on in a place where there's some risk to our national security, Afghanistan's a good example because we bugged out of Afghanistan and don't have the capacity to collect intelligence that we need or that we used to have. That's a risk for us. You know, we don't have the intelligence that we need. And that's an issue on the border, as you correctly point out.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I hope that everyone that's listening right now, listen to what Daniel's saying. I mean, these are very important issues for every single one of us. And as we come up to the election, no matter what you believe, no matter who you are, remember, our national security is literally at risk right now. We live in a different day and an age. We live in a modern age where our enemies have as much capacity to do damage as we do. I mean, and maybe even more so if we're not paying attention. But Daniel, I want to thank you for being on the show. I want everyone to go to Fox News. The story is Virginia, 12-year-old, is helping kids with cancer after losing his own mom to the disease. Daniel, your son is my hero, Jaron Hoffman. He's 12 years old. He's raised, what, $200,000 now for children fighting childhood cancer in honor of your beautiful wife. And that's got to be a pretty awesome feeling for your whole family.
Yeah, thank you so much for hearing the story and for supporting us. You know, I think about my wife, you know, from the time I wake up till the time I go to sleep and all the time in between, you know, and the fact that my son is honoring her memory like this and helping kids fight cancer, you know, that's that means the world to me. And it's really heartwarming just how many people support this cause. And I encourage people, go look at the Jesse Reese Foundation. You'll see the story. Watch the video of Jesse Reese, and I'm going to guess that you're probably not going to make it through the video without shedding a few tears, but that's how we all kind of come together and support each other, you know? And I always say, you know, God bless the Reese family for doing this. Jesse Reese's father is a pastor, and he devoted his life now to sending these joy jars, hundreds of thousands of them all over the world to help kids.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. So there are these big jars and you just put all kinds of cool stuff in it. Is that what we're going to do? Because if I get down there on October 8th, I'm going to be annoying you and just stuffing jars and doing everything I can.
So Jesse's dad will be there and he's going to speak to us. And then they're going to explain how Jesse wanted the jars to be stuffed. She had her own way of doing it. And so we honor her memory by doing this as she taught us. And then they try to stuff the jars with the stuff that the kids want. They are in touch with hospitals and other caregivers so that they're giving kids, you know, what they want, what they need. And then the kids feel like, hey, somebody cares about me and that brightened my day. And I'm going to – look, there's a big connection, I think, between feeling like people care about you when you're fighting cancer. My wife got a lot of that strength from her family and friends who were in her corner. Mm-hmm. And when she was too tired to fight, we all stepped in and fought for her until she was ready to get back in the fight. And that's what you're doing by giving these kids the joy jars and showing them that here's somebody from across the country who's thinking about you and cares about you.
That is awesome. I just can't wait to be a part of it. I'm so grateful that you shared that story here. Remember, folks, October 8th at Tyson Sport and Health in McLean, Virginia. What you do is just, I'm going to cry. I think that's amazing. And I know everybody who's listening, who, especially those of us with children, can't thank you and your family enough for fighting for all the kids in the world that are, you know, up against so much, and especially children suffering from cancer and fighting cancer. And I could just pray that maybe one day we find a cure to this horrific disease. And I think we will. I really do. I really believe that in my heart. And we're a great nation. We're a giving nation. So thank you, Daniel, for being on the show.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Thanks again to Daniel Hoffman for not only sharing his amazing story of him and his family and all that we can be doing to helping fight childhood cancer and cancer in general, but what we could do right now to bring smiles to children's faces and let them know that we care. And thank you again to Daniel for informing us about what is happening in our world, especially why we should be paying attention to what is happening in Ukraine, why we should be paying attention to what China, our adversary, is doing to us here, right at home, in our homeland, and why we as a nation need to start mending our fences, getting back together, finding like some common ground to discuss these very important issues, because guess what? This is the nation that we all have to protect. There's no other nation on earth like it. Again, Daniel's always welcome back on my show. And thank you so much for being a part of the show, everyone. God bless you. God bless our great nation. And God bless all the children in the world, that we may one day find a cure for this horrible disease known as cancer. And thank you so much to everyone for doing your part to fight it. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Explain the differences. What makes AMAC superior to AARP, beyond the fact that we don't agree with their leftist ideology?
What makes us so unique is that we truly do take our marching orders from our membership. Before we go out and about and advocate for any issue, we do consult with our AMAC members, and we do that through a variety of ways. But that really makes us very different. Where AARP stood in support of Obamacare, even though their membership was largely against, AMAC will stand in support of our membership. In addition, Sarah, we offer benefits. We offer benefits just like the AARP. Ours are better because we offer choices. For example, you can call AMAC for your Medicare, and we're not going to do a one-size-fits-all, one plan. The AARP endorses United Healthcare, whereas AMAC has its own trusted in-house licensed insurance advisors that are working for AMAC, stand for our mission of faith, family, and freedom, and then go about offering real choices. We do a lot of things like that that I think make us very different and make us, quite frankly, better.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit AMAC.us/Carter.
Hey guys, we know it's hard to keep up with all the news these days, but don't worry because we're here to talk and laugh about it all. The Biden administration still isn't handling the border crisis, even with millions of illegals flooding the border, and woke culture is infecting our schools, so it's more important than ever to get involved in your community. Hey, it's the Chicks here from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Politics to pop culture, nobody's safe, but it's all fun. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.